Hello and welcome to the Farming Advice Service podcast. The Farming Advice Service, or FAS as you'll hear it referred to in this podcast, is funded by DEFRA to help farmers in England understand and meet the requirements of cross compliance, the basic payment scheme and other relevant UK policies. This podcast complements our other information sources and you can find more on events, webinars, technical articles and other online resources at farmingadviceservice.org.uk. And you can follow us on Twitter at DEFRA FAS. So hello, my name's Laura Harpham, and for this episode, I'll be talking to Andrew Wells from the Arable Alliance about changes to cross-compliance requirements in 2022. It's great to have you joining us for this podcast, Andrew. Hi, welcome. Now, before we get talking about the cross-compliance rules, I'll just ask you to give us a little bit of an introduction. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background, please?
Thanks, Laura. Yes, I work as an independent farm consultant in the East Midlands, and I've been part of the FAS team supporting farmers with cross compliance since way back in 2005. I was one of the original team, so I've had 17 years of living with cross compliance. Most of my work is on farm in terms of crop agronomy and farm management. But I also get involved with BPS applications, environmental stewardship applications, farm management, as well as the work I do for FAS. And just in between time, we farm at home. My wife's a farmer, so I get involved tractor driving occasionally at harvest. So I have a varied job description, I would say.
Brilliant. Well, thanks, Andrew. It's great to have you and to hear that we're in such expert and varied hands. Now, we're here to talk about cross compliance for 2022 and to hopefully give listeners some insight to help them navigate the rules and make meeting them as straightforward as possible. The podcast will be split broadly into two halves. We'll talk about the differences in the approach to enforcement announced for this year, because we've recently had some news on that. And I think we'll agree, and hopefully the listeners will also agree, that it's a step in the right direction in many ways. And then we'll touch on some of the most common breaches that we're aware of in the last few years and where to find help and guidance on avoiding those. So first of all, Andrew, what do we know about how enforcement will work this year and how might it look different to previous years?
Well, let's start at the beginning for 2022. We've had the cross compliance rules published just before Christmas for the 22 year. And once again, there's no changes from the rules for cross compliance in the previous year. So listeners might think, well, if the rules haven't changed, there's nothing different. But the subtlety and the improvements are in what DEFRA have been doing behind the rules. Because while we were part of the European Union, we had to abide by cross compliance on a pan-European basis. Sure. And there was very little flexibility for maybe making rule interpretation and penalties more proportionate for English farmers. Mm-hmm. When we finally left the EU and DEFRA got complete or almost complete control of the rules on the 1st of January 2021, they started by trying to make some improvements and responded to some of the pressures about penalties being disproportionate with the breach that was that had happened to the rules. And what we've seen in 22 is a further move by DEFRA to make penalties where possible more proportionate, and in actual fact make more use of early warning system letters to farmers, so they're getting a warning letter rather than a financial penalty applied. Now, the way that DEFRA have done this is by altering the verifiable standards, which is the sort of penalty structure that's applied to some of the rules. And you've got to understand that cross compliance is that for a whole variety of reasons, for protecting the environment, the landscape, animal welfare, mm-hmm. food traceability, and the reduction in penalties and more use of early warning letters is only coming into action where really the rule breach doesn't damage the environment, doesn't affect animal welfare, doesn't affect food traceability. So these are sort of relatively minor offences that were picking up rather disproportionate penalties.
Okay.
So back in 21, a year ago, the first moves were made to make penalties less severe. And they focused on the buffer zones next to hedges and watercourses and public rights of way. This year, DEFRA have been more ambitious and they have made changes to the verifiable standards to cattle recording and identification, mm-hmm. sheep records and identification, and some of the elements of the NVZ regulations under SMR1. And these, as many people will know, were areas of high numbers of breaches historically. The other thing that DEFRA have done, that they're building on what they did in 21 for 22, is they're now assessing the level of farmer engagement with cross compliance when they make an inspection.
Right, okay.
And they start from the point of assuming that all the farmers they inspect are well engaged, have a good understanding of the rules, and have good systems in place to comply with the rules. Mm-hmm. And if during the inspection, the inspector comes to the conclusion that that is the case, then some of the breaches for cattle and sheep identification and records and nitrogen vulnerable zone records will get a lower level of penalty because of the engagement by the farmer. If the inspector feels that the farmer is not particularly well engaged, they haven't got good systems in place, they're not particularly aware of the rules and how to abide by them, then they'll stay on the previous penalty system and there won't be sort of the more lenient penalties applied. So I think it's positive.
Thank you. That was a really useful synopsis. It sounds that the changes are essentially designed to make the system fairer, to acknowledge that cross-compliance is there to deliver certain things, so certain protections. And if a breach or some of the examples you gave, missing records, etc., aren't causing damage to whatever it is that's supposed to be protected, if it seems like the breach is coming from matters outside of a farmer's control in certain circumstances, or that there's real evidence that they've engaged well with the rules and it's not an issue of negligence or deliberate avoidance, it's a pretty minor infraction, then there is a little bit more flexibility in the new rules to recognise that farmers are essentially doing the best that they can to meet what needs to be done.
I think you're absolutely right. And DEFRA have put some figures together looking at what they are expecting the changes to be with this change to assessing farmer engagement in 2022 for cattle and sheep farmers. And the DEFRA estimates that changing the verifiable standards for 2022 are that up to 90% of cattle keepers and 75% of sheep keepers will benefit from the new verifiable standards for this year, yes, resulting in lower penalties and more use of early warning system letters or just an advisory letter. And the analogy DEFRA have used is that they're basically accepting that where people have got a large number of records to keep, no matter how good you are, you're going to have a few mistakes. And they accept that a few mistakes, if everything else is right, doesn't mean that you're actually creating a risk or harming the environment or traceability. And it's a bit like an advisory notice when you take your car to an MOT.
Okay.
There's something wrong that's not quite right. You might be getting low on some of the tire tread. So they'll give you an advisory to say, just have a look at this, because before you bring it in next year, you know, we'd like to see this as being fixed or attended to. And I think that's a really useful analogy. And the other thing that we're seeing, and we saw it last year with inspections, was that inspectors are more able to guide and advise for sources of information and things that maybe farmers could do better. So it's making, I think, the inspections a little bit more useful and farmer friendly.
Okay, brilliant. And in terms of what people can expect if they are inspected, appreciate that last year we had a lower than usual inspection rate because of the pandemic situation. And we think that that's going to pick up again this year, although, of course, nobody necessarily knows what's going to happen in the next few months. So if someone is inspected, and there are some breaches identified, is the early warning letter or potential a letter for other action coming out pretty quickly after that breach? Will it be a conversation that actually happens on the day, or is it a follow-up paperwork?
Well, hopefully there's a conversation through the inspection with the inspection and the farmer, because one of the improvements that was made last year to all inspections was that when the farmer's notified of the inspection, they're getting a letter or an email listing the records and documents the inspector might want to see during the inspection, so that the farmer can prepare and have everything ready, and it's less of a panic of finding things. Mm-hmm. The other improvement that's been made for this year is that after every inspection, the farmer will get a letter fairly quickly after it, giving the result of the inspection. So they'll find out almost straight away whether they've have got any issues, whether they've considered to have passed it all or have got some failures. And there'll be some information about what the time scale and likely follow-up is of that. I think I've got to point out at this stage though, Laura, that, you know, the farming industry in England is incredibly compliant. If you look at the number of inspections done and the number of penalties that are found, the vast, vast majority of farmers who are inspected are fully compliant. We are a very good industry at delivering high quality food and traceability. And, you know, you can listen to all these podcasts and think, as a consequence, that everyone's got a problem. That is not the case. Most people are getting it absolutely right.
You're quite right, Andrew. It's great to hear. And to a certain extent, then when we're moving on to the next element of the podcast, which is the most common breaches that we are aware of, it's good to have that context that we're talking about common breaches, but actually in the grand scheme of the number of inspections that are happening and the number of breaches that are picked up. They might be most common, but they're still a fairly small proportion of the overall results. Having said that, we do know that there are a certain number of areas that present a challenge year on year. We have a fair amount of data from DEFRA and the RPA to indicate where they know that there are some challenges. So are you able to take us through a few of these, maybe start with the most common from the last couple of years, and then hopefully we can flag up some resources to help people to avoid common trip ups?
So I'm afraid the most common failure, both by number of inspections failed and by the percentage of inspections that failed, has been cattle identification and registration. Mm-hmm. And there's probably no surprises here when you consider the number of cattle there are in England and the number of movements and just the amount of record keeping that needs to go along with it. I suppose the positive to take away from this is that the numbers of farmers with failures has gradually been reducing as the industry has become better at dealing with the record keeping and the ear tagging that's been necessary. And I think if you look at what the failures are found to be, probably there's one group of failures which I would say is to do with keeping the records of what's on the farm up to date with BCMS and CTS, cattle tracing system. So when an inspector comes out to a farm with cattle, they will come with a list of cattle that they think they should be able to find on the farm. And it's when there's discrepancies because an animal's died, gone off to the recycling unit for pet food or whatever, but that's not being reported, so that's animals still on the records, or if births haven't been recorded correctly. So it's really quite useful for farmers to make sure that their actual cattle on the farm do match the official records. And if there's a problem, if there's a mistake being made, often you can correct that without penalty ahead of an inspection. It's only if it doesn't match when the inspection happens that things start to get a little bit difficult. The next area is just recording movements on and off the farm and making sure moves to market or sales or moves to slaughter are recorded correctly. Then we get onto the tagging issue, and you know, animals do lose tags, and inspectors don't expect to see everything with two tags all the time every day because they're cattle and they lose tags. But it's a case of demonstrating that you've got a system where if an animal's got a missing tag, then you do order a replacement tag, and that replacement tag's, you know, put in the prescribed period. They are the main issues that people can address, and they have been pretty consistent over the years, to be honest. So there's nothing much new there. It is all about just having a really good recording system and trying to be as accurate as possible.
Brilliant, thank you. Yeah, it seems like there's a few things to be aware of in terms of keeping up to date. So obviously these things are most straightforward to keep on top of if it's just a daily or weekly check, rather than having to go through potentially months of records once you get that letter from the inspector. So keeping on top of things as you go, but also good to know that if once you do get a notification of inspection, there are a few gaps that need to be filled, that there is an opportunity again within the potentially fairer system this year to make sure that everything's in place for when the inspection occurs. Okay, thank you. So livestock movements and ID, cattle is a particular challenge. Is there another common breach that we know comes a close second?
A close second still stays with cattle, I'm afraid, and it's the food and feed law element, which is the TB testing requirement for cattle in England. And obviously it depends where you are in the country, the intensity and intervals between TB tests, but it's a breach of cross compliance to be late getting a TB test done. And this is one of the areas where an automatic penalty may be applied without an inspector actually needing to turn upon farm to inspect you, because obviously the dates of TB testing and the TB results go into the central system. So the good news is that the numbers of failures for being late with TB testing has reduced dramatically in the last 3 years, as I think the cattle industry has got better at working out how to, you know, manage getting testers booked and things like that. But still things can go wrong. You know, the vet who was, you know, destined to come tomorrow, you know, gets kicked TB testing the previous afternoon, isn't fit enough to come. There's a problem. So there are issues with people getting close to the wire and then something going wrong. So try and put a bit of a safety margin into booking testing, just in case anything goes wrong. And if it's outside your control, do let the RPA know, because there is more flexibility now than there used to be where things are outside your control. So I'm afraid, yeah, cattle TB testing is number two still, but it's improving.
Okay, good. Moving in the right direction, but still something to pay attention to. And as you say, in this instance, it may not be flexibility and leeway that we would potentially have with livestock movements and identification. So to say, try not to cut it so close to the wire that if things outside of your control cause a delay for any reason, then you're put in a difficult position. That's good guidance. Okay, so top two relating to cattle, and I believe the next one down is a livestock issue as well. So hopefully this will be particularly useful to the listeners who have one or both on farm. Do we have a common issue with sheep as well?
Well, sheep and goat failures, but let's be honest, it's mainly sheep failures in England, consistently been in the top three. Again, it's records and identification that's the problem. And there's no surprises, really, when you think that every adult sheep has an individual number. You know, the numbers involved are huge. And with a lot of sheep movements, particularly with the store element of the market, there's just an awful lot of record keeping that needs to be done. So the failures are often associated with identification of the animals in the first place. So it's recording the date of first identification. It's recording replacing missing tags. At least with sheep, unlike cattle, you don't have to order a matching tag if a tag goes missing. You can re-tag with the appropriate tags, depending on where the animal was born, whether it was on your holding or off your holding. Then it's sort of recording deaths of sheep and just making sure that whole identification process works. And then as a separate issue really is the movement records on and off the holdings. And, you know, in some cases, sheep are much more mobile because they're being used to graze, cover crops, catch crops. But the use or the increased use of temporary land associations to basically put a field onto your own holding and reduce the requirement to record and report movements is particularly useful. And just remember that those temporary land associations are annual, so you've got to renew them each year to benefit from them. Sheep inspections, I think, will benefit from the new verifiable standards and farmer engagement. So I'm optimistic that we'll see more use of an early warning system, letters, less onerous penalties, provided that fundamental identification system is in place and animals are identifiable and records aren't that far off what's really happened.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, as you say, quite a lot of overlap with the cattle identification and registration challenges in terms of tagging, movements, a couple of extra things to be aware of with sheep, as you say, as well. But if you've got good day-to-day practices in place and you're keeping track of things in the farm office just as a business as usual activity, then you shouldn't get caught out in inspection because everything will be more or less lined up and at your fingertips. Great. Now, the next one, which I know that we've had quite a few questions about into the FAS helpline, is also an issue for cross-compliance, and that is NVZs. Can you give us a bit of a rundown of where the tripping points are for cross-compliance breaches, please?
Yes. So the nitrate vulnerable zone requirements, SMR1, obviously only applies to the parts of England that are in a nitrate vulnerable zone.
Of course, yeah.
And so there's a fair area that's actually not within the zone. But I think, you know, most farmers know whether they're in an NVZ or not, because really the boundaries haven't changed very much nationally for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So if you are in a nitrate vulnerable zone, then the vast, vast majority of the failures have been down to record keeping, either current year records or historic records, because according to the rules, farmers within an NVZ are supposed to keep records for 5 years. Now, I've only once been asked on an inspection to provide records going back 5 years. Mm-hmm. In most cases, the inspector wants to see the current year records. And if they're correct, complete, they sort of take it on trust that previous years have been correct and complete. And the change, the verifiable standards for this year, is going to make small errors with records not being complete, I think, result in an early warning system letter, provided there's good farmer engagement with the rest of the rules. The other issues to do with nitrate vulnerable zones are generally orientated around manure heaps in fields and the temporary storage of manure in fields. Now, in an NVZ, the rules allow you to store manure for up to 12 months on a field, and then it needs to be, within that 12 months, spread to land or moved to a different location, either in the same field or in a different field. There's rules as to where the manure heap can be. It's got to be more than 10 metres away from surface water, more than 10 metres away from the effective land drain. The manure's got to be dry enough to be stackable. It's not a heap of sloppy blancmange that spreads all over when it rains. You've got to build a heap and basically stack the heap in the field so you minimise the footprint of the heap. And if it's raw, neat poultry manure, it's got to be covered with a sheet, which is a particularly unpleasant job for anyone. But there have been failures for manure heaps remaining in the same place or being put in inappropriate places. But the vast majority of the problems have become from the records. And one of the key areas of records is having a nitrogen plan in place before you start spreading fertilizer. And that's a plan that is a four-stage plan. It takes account of what nitrogen's already in the soil from previous cropping, what nitrogen's required by the crop that you're growing, how much nitrogen's being supplied by any organic manures that have been applied, and therefore what is the balance required from an inorganic bagged fertilizer or liquid fertilizer supply. And it's having that plan in place that is quite a common failure in the record keeping requirements. But as I say, I'm hoping that with the improvements that have been made to the inspections and verifiable standards, we see less penalties for NVZ breaches this year.
Okay, good to know. And as you said before, in terms of the inspectors looking at whether the breaches actually have an impact on whatever it is that they are designed to, the cross-compliance rules are designed to protect, something to take into account when both looking at records and also things like manure heaps, consider what the potential risks are to the environment when planning on-farm activity. Okay, so the final one before we wrap up, number five on the list of most common breaches is slightly different to the others that we have covered. And animal welfare more broadly, can you give us any specific examples of what we know that inspections have picked up in the past and what farmers should be considering when looking at this?
Yeah, I mean, this may come as a bit of a surprise to listeners that animal welfare is up in the top five. But you've got to remember that animal welfare is one of the inspections that's often quite targeted. So inspectors are responding because animals have been presented at market in poor condition, or because of complaints from the general public, or just because people have got a history of maybe not great animal welfare. Mm-hmm. So I think the inspections are picking out probably more failures than just purely random inspections would do.
Right. Yep.
The other theme, I think, from animal welfare is just there's a massive range of issues that inspectors are finding that are breaches of animal welfare. But if I run through some of the more common failures that are found, it will just highlight some areas. So one of the issues is that there's just insufficient staff present on the farm to maintain a high enough standard of animal welfare, or the numbers of staff there are not of sufficient caliber or don't have the training to actually deliver high animal welfare in the first place. Then the other issue often is that sick animals aren't being cared for correctly, and they're not being given they're not being taken to the vet, or a vet's not being called. They're being left to suffer, maybe because of financial issues or fear of what it's going to cost, or just a lack of understanding as to when an animal needs to be getting some medical treatment. Record keeping with medicine administration is an area that's often picked upon inspections. An inspector may want to see the medicine store, see what's in the store, and if there's sort of half-used bottles of antibiotics or other medicines, they may say, well, can you show me the records of which animals have had which dose, when, what the withdrawal periods are, and things like that. With animals that are living or being kept outside, they've got to have a dry lying area available to them at all times. That can be challenging at times with some of the English weather and some of the extreme weather we've had. And that's an area where I think sometimes, you know, particularly sheep may be kept outside on stubble turnips, or they're grazing a cover crop, and a member of the public might think, well, those poor sheep don't appear to have anything to eat and there's nowhere to lie. And that might be a phone call in that results in an inspection. So a dry lying area, a supply of fresh water, or requirements under animal welfare, and making sure that basically if they're inside, the housing is safe, there's no sharp edges protruding or nothing that's going to damage them that way. So it is a wide range of areas that can result in failures for animal welfare. And really, I think in advance of an inspection, it's worth just making sure that, you know, medicine records are up to date, there's no nails sticking out of bits of gates, or there's nothing too sharp hanging around. If you've got animals outside, they have got a dry area for lying on and bedding, and it, obviously anything that's sick or ill is being cared for appropriately. And I don't think anyone would disagree that we should have higher standards of animal welfare in this country.
Absolutely, yeah. And I know from experience of conversations with farmers with various different forms of livestock that the care for the animal, both from a business perspective and also from a personal pride perspective, is there in the vast number of certainly interactions that I've had, and that daily checks are going on. But it's useful to have a run through of the things that we know are most commonly picked up on. Okay, so finally, just before I wrap things up, we've covered a fair amount in this podcast to a certain amount of detail, but you did also very kindly run a webinar for us on the 17th of January, looking at cross-compliance changes and some of the breaches in a little bit more detail. And the recording of that will be available on the FAS webpages very shortly, if it's not already. So if you want to know more, I would encourage people to go online and look at that. And the final thing from me is just to thank you, Andrew, very much for your help, both with the webinar and for today's podcast and answering our questions, talking to us. Thanks also to the listeners. As I say, please do check out the website for further guidance. We have got other episodes in this series of podcasts as well. And we're hearing from some industry experts on supporting farmers through resilience, steps to reducing ammonia emissions on farm, and particularly relevant to today's podcast, tackling the challenges of livestock movements and ID, in addition to the webinar. And the podcast and newsletter team would welcome any feedback and suggestions on what else you want to know about in this series and other FAS guidance. So please do email advice@farmingadviceservice.org.uk or send us a tweet at DefraFAS. And if you'd like to keep up to date with future podcasts, events and news from the Farming Advice Service, you can sign up to the monthly newsletter, which is packed full of timely nudges around cross-compliance deadlines and also relevant advice on the FAS website at farmingadviceservice.org.uk. So thanks again for listening, and take care. Bye-bye.